Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
You spent your PhD trying to keep cancer alive. Did you work for Big Pharma?
Yeah, right.
You have to keep it alive so then you can figure out how to kill it.
Interesting.
Basically what the research is. Keep it alive and then do things to it to try and kill it. It's basically torture for cancer cells.
And she has a PhD in that. What we're saying is don't fuck with Dr. Alice. Right? Cancer fears Dr. Alice.
God awful movie.
Welcome back to the Gamcast, where each week we sample another selection from Christian cinema, or we get the hose again. I'm your host, No Illusions. Heath and Eli are both off this week, so I'm going to be handling this one solo. No, I'm not. You already heard the teaser at the beginning, so you know that. How fucked up would that be? I'm kidding. Marsh is here. Welcome back, Marsh.
No, I'm just not going to say anything this entire episode, though. You can do it yourself. All my notes were just here to prank you. You're going to do this entire thing silently.
All right. All right.
A silent audience of me.
All right. Well, also joining us is Marcia's co-host on Skeptics with a K and guest masochist who will have her veteran card punched in no time, Dr. Alice Howarth. Alice, welcome back.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, Marsh, what will we be breaking down today?
Okay. We watched Miracle at Manchester. It is the story of a kind-hearted veteran turned mechanic who one day, after a lifetime of searching, and thanks to his immense generosity and kind acts, manages to find his dream car, a 1960s Ford Mustang. God is great. Also, a kid gets brain cancer, but that's kind of neither here nor there for this film.
So you prioritize it the way the filmmaker did. Interesting. Yeah. And Dr. Alice, how bad was this movie?
Well, if you like father-son movies that valorize veterans and occasional casual violence, then you will love this movie.
Yeah, well, that's what they were going for. Yeah. All right, so is there anything you guys want to nominate this one for being the best and being the worst at?
Oh, yeah. So I've got to go straight in with best worst background hospitaling.
Oh, God.
Because a lot of this movie will take place in a hospital. Yeah. Or at least that's what they want you to think. What it will take place in is a room that looks relatively hospital-ish, and then a corridor that they've bought a desk, like a reception desk, and they've given some people, some of them have got white coats, some of them have got like the blue scrubs, and they're just going to walk backwards and forwards in the background as if they're hospitaling. And it's, you can see them having the like fake conversation, rhubarb, 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 rhubarb.
At one point, like one of them goes down the stairs and then down the escalator. Yeah, it's fucking hilarious.
It's amazing.
So I was going to go with best worst collection of American cliches. So Eli, in all of his prankosity or whatever, decided to do a movie called Miracle at Manchester with and get me two British guests, and it's Manchester fucking California or some shit.
Yeah,
okay.
Right?
It's not our Manchester, which we're both quite close to.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. But honestly, this movie could not be more American. By minute 5 of the film, we had already seen a star-spangled store, a house-sized truck, ridiculously big portion sizes, religion in school, unaffordable healthcare, and baseball. It might as well have opened in a scene of a fucking sprawling cheese aisle or something.
Yeah, it is pretty American. It does take a while before we find out that it's in Manchester as well. You've got to infer that from like context clues because the word Manchester is written on some of the buildings.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It has nothing to do with any fucking thing.
I don't think it comes up at all. I don't think they mention Manchester other than in the name.
Mm-hmm.
My best worst is the introductions. So, I mean, this is a terrible film for all of the cuts between all of the scenes. There are so many scenes that are so short. But in the first 4 minutes, we get introductions of three different groups of people. I think it's like 8 people in 4 minutes. And we get zero of their names, none of their names, until like way past halfway through the film for some of them.
We're all doing find and replace to go back and put names under Mechie Mechanic or whatever that we'd had written in there.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. In fact, like one of the scenes we will get to, but like one of the people they introduce us to, and it seems like it's going to be really important, is this young family. And then they disappear for like 25 minutes of the film. And only the dad comes back as well. Yeah. Like the other family, the rest of the family just completely gone. They apparently were important enough to put in the first 2 minutes of the film and then to never show
yes!
again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nuts. All right. Well, Eli's prank war this week was given the three of us childhood brain tumors as a comedy premise. So we're going to take a minute to plot our revenge, but we'll be back in a flash after that with all the doldrums that are Miracle at Manchester. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the first writer's room meeting for Miracle at Manchester.
Shouldn't that be Miracle in Manchester?
Yeah. Yeah, but no, but we're going to make a little cross out of the T and at for the title.
But Manchester already has a T in it.
Gosh darn it, we didn't think of that. And the titles have already gone out.
It's okay. I'm sure nobody's going to notice. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, probably not. All right, so we're going to be telling the true story of Bryson Newman, who had a brain tumor, and then after extensive medical treatment, multiple surgeries, radiation therapy, experimental medication, and a prayer circle, recovered. Miraculously.
Praise Jesus.
I'm sure it was mostly Jesus, yes.
Okay, question?
No need to raise your hand, man.
Oh, okay. It's just, how are we going to keep that interesting for 90 minutes?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So first of all, we are not going to make 90 minutes. Like maybe 80 if we add some real life footage of the kid playing football and some like news interview segments. Secondly, we're really going to focus in on the kid's car.
His car?
Yeah. Yeah, no, some guy gave him a car. So I figured we could delve into that guy's entire life story.
Really?
Yeah, his relationship with his wife, his time in NAM, his career as an auto mechanic, his medical history.
Why would we do that?
Well, because otherwise we'd have to focus in on all the science that saved the kid's life while Jesus was twiddling his thumbs.
So he was in Vietnam, you say?
I think so.
That's excellent.
Hey, Noah, now that we've got a break, I've been dying to ask, what is that strapped to your back?
You like it? It's my new Lisa mattress.
Okay, and it's strapped to your back because...
Well, since we started doing video, I've had a lot more work to do and I haven't been able to find enough time to sleep. But luckily, now that I have this incredible Legend Show hybrid mattress from Lisa, I fall asleep in minutes every time I lay down. So I figured I'd just keep it strapped to my back. So anytime I have a few free minutes.
Okay, I see. But isn't that really uncomfortable?
No, not at all. I took the sleep quiz on Lisa's website and it only took 2 minutes to match me with the perfect mattress for my specific sleep positions and preferences.
Okay, yeah, sure. But... it seems inconvenient.
No, not at all. With free shipping, easy returns, and 120-night sleep trial, it was as convenient as it could be.
We meant having it strapped to your back?
Oh, yes. That is both uncomfortable and inconvenient.
Right. Yeah. Okay, but like with all the work that I'm doing on the Noel Rogan Experience, I'm in, actually. Yeah, where do I sign up?
Well, you're in luck. Their 4th of July sale is going on now, so go to Lisa.com for 30% off select mattresses plus an extra $50 off with the promo code AWFUL, exclusive to our listeners. That's Leesa.com, promo code AWFUL for 30% off selected mattresses plus an extra $50 off. Lisa.com, promo code AWFUL.
Sounds great. So, hey, what's 4th of July? Is that like an American holiday or something?
Well, yeah, but these days it's like a day of mourning.
Sure, yeah.
And we're back for the breakdown, and we're going to open up on that sweet endorphin release I get when I see the Bridgestone Media logo. You know, you're in for a treat. And then we see the Miracle at Manchester title.
I think this is the first religious film for God-awful movies that I've done. Usually I get documentaries and stuff and people drinking piss and other
well, it's
such...
not and people drinking. It's documentaries about people drinking.
Yeah, they're not like just drinking piss in the background of a totally different documentary. In fact, it's something probably else.
Well, so not half, are. Half the movies we do are documentaries. The other half are piss porn when we have outside.
So I feel like I had the really obvious question of like, what is the crucifix in the at, and what does the JC in JC film stand for?
Yeah, right.
Could be anything. Could be absolutely anything.
So we open up on a Catholic school, mostly like the football field and the baseball field. So it's a very athletic Catholic school.
Yeah,
and this is where I realized it wasn't Manchester, UK. It was Manchester, boring American state somewhere. And I was so annoyed by that because I knew that later Dean Cain was going to be in this. And I wanted Dean Cain to have to do a Manc accent. I was genuinely excited to see like the bloated corpse of 90s Superman trying to like channel his inner Liam Gallagher. And it was not happening. I also saw that, just very weird aside, the executive producer of this film is Doug Manchester.
Really?
Which feels like either a made-up name or the branding of an urban infrastructure project. Like, oh yeah, we at Doug Manchester have created you a brand new shopping centre in Manchester, wherever.
So we start off, these kids are in the hallway at their Catholic school, and we learn right away that these filmmakers don't know how to mic people in a crowded hallway. So they've just asked the two main actors. Yeah, these two actors have to shout at each other while everybody else talks at a kind of low level.
Yeah, it's so good. Just shouting over the background extras. I felt so uncomfortable for them.
So we're going to meet Cancer Boy. This is Bryson.
But we don't get his name then.
No.
We do not get his name for a while.
No, eventually he will have
been. We know that
Bryson.
This is Bryson and his girlfriend, Alex.
It was looking for a while like the only way we'd find this kid's name is when we saw his gravestone after he died of cancer. Like, that's the first time we'd get his name.
All right, so the first time I knew the girlfriend's name was just now when Dr. Alice said it. So she was Alex, huh?
Yeah, it's dropped in about two-thirds of the way through the film, quite subtly.
Okay.
And then I think there's a conversation she has on the bleachers where it's mentioned for a second time, and that is it. There is two mentions of her name in the entire film.
Yeah, and I don't like to comment too much on people's appearances, but his girlfriend is very clearly meant to be like religious movie hot.
Yes.
Like she looks like Bible group Veronica Mars. Like she's Christian Bell. Like Christian Bell.
Yes.
And like, I don't want to comment too much. She could have at least have run a comb through her hair. Like this time, I think the real story, the real C plot of this film is her learning throughout the film to tidy her hair up a little bit. Because it gets less and less wild as we go along.
I think we start where she's learned about backcombing. And then she starts to learn how to control the backcombing.
Okay. Sure. No, so like, honestly, everybody in this movie, with the possible exception of the main kid of Bryson, just looked like they weren't quite, like they were a knockoff of a real person. Like they were, like we were at Uncanny Valley High or something. But she says, walk me to my class. And then he walks her to her class, which is immediately next to where they are. Maybe it was just bad editing.
Steps.
But yeah, it looked like he walked her three fucking steps.
And then he's late for his class. Like, she didn't have to walk her very far.
Yes.
I really want his class to just be over the corridor. If I hadn't walked those three steps, I could have used those three steps to get to my room instead.
But we meet him. We know his big baseball game's coming up. And then we cut to this mechanic shop that looks like what I figured Dr. Alice just imagines all American businesses look like. Right? We just see American flags and American slogans and a veteran's flag. And it's star-spangled all around.
And then they bring in a guy who's talking to the mechanic at the shop and trying to make it obvious that he's a veteran by putting him in a camo jacket and asking about free work for veterans.
Yes.
And it's an incredibly ill-fitting camo jacket. And I think the thing is, a veteran wearing an ill-fitting camo jacket, that's why you lost NAMM. This is why you lost NAMM. If your equipment had just been better suited to the persona and the terrain.
Yeah, obviously. But what we learn about this character is that he does free work on veterans' cars, right?
Yeah.
So he's retired from his job as an auto mechanic, and now he's got a home garage where he does pro bono brake jobs or whatever.
Yeah, but he's not supposed to be doing this.
No.
At this point, it's unclear why he's not supposed to be doing it, but he does turn down the veteran and say that he can't do it, he's too busy, and then says, but if you bring it round at 3 a.m, we'll get it done, don't worry.
Which seems like just a dick move, right? Like, this veteran's probably got like a job to go to. It's like, oh man, fuck, I guess I can come then. Could I leave it here and then it would just be here at 3 a.m.?
It would just already be here. So I hadn't picked up at this point, because we don't get properly introduced this. I hadn't picked up that he was doing this in his amateur time. I thought this was a professional garage. Yes. I thought, does this movie think like mechanics work on a walk-in system like a barbershop? Like, you can just book it and get this guy a diary and like book it in. And then for him to say, could you come back at 3 a.m? That's an insane decision. That means he's going to have to wake up at 2:30 a.m. to start working on this car. He's for free.
Yeah.
Wild. Absolutely wild.
I don't think I want the brake job that a guy does for free at 3 a.m. I just, this is nice of him to offer and everything. But yeah. So, okay. So then we cut to this family at dinner, this enigmatic family that will matter none tall into the entire fucking movie.
And I spent so long thinking about this family at this point, because I thought these are going to be the most important. This is the first time we see a child. And we know this is a film about, you know, children with cancer. Okay, this is going to be really important. So I was watching this scene for clues as to what was going on. They're eating penne pasta with some very boring tomato sauce on it next to the world's largest cauldron filled with salad that none of them are eating.
It's
nobody.
So absurd how much salad is.
It's ludicrous. And none of them are touching it at all. This is always the case. Whenever we watch these films, they always eat the pasta and no one ever eats the salad. It drives me mad.
Except for Eric Roberts, who eats it with a knife and fork.
He eats with a knife and fork. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, so this family is odd. The girl is 10.
Yeah, she's definitely about 10.
Yeah.
Which is very surprising given what she says next.
Yeah, right. She's like, what did you learn at school? I learned that butterflies are pretty. And I'm like, really? That's fifth grade material nowadays. Huh?
It's common core. That's the problem. It's right. Common core, man.
It's new math. That's what they change. So yeah, and also the dad is like 24. So like,
yeah.
But also he looked 16. And then the mum, I didn't think this was dad.
Yeah.
I thought this is mum, like young child, and the young child's older brother.
Big brother, yeah.
So when the child turns to him and says daddy, I was like, what the fuck has gone on with this family dynamic? Because the mum does look like 30-something.
She looks like a mum.
Yes. She looks a good 10, 15 years older than him. Yeah.
Mum of a 10-year-old. She looks like a mum of a 10-year-old.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
He looks like the big brother of a 10-year-old.
Yes, exactly.
Wild casting. But like you've got the dad, so the family here, the little girl starts talking about miracles and the dad, very importantly, will have no talk of miracles at his table. Oh, yes. That's kind of his character. And I thought, well, given how big a portion of pasta that they're eating and how little salad they're eating, the real miracle is that he's fitting into those jeans, to be honest.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Marsh, because throughout all of my notes, he is not a miracle dad to me because basically the first thing he said is miracles don't exist.
Yep. Exactly. She's like, oh, it's a miracle that butterflies come from caterpillars. He's like, there's no miracles. And then he storms off. And he gets so mad about that he leaves the table.
Yeah, midway through dinner.
Yeah, he storms off, hopefully. Yeah.
Right, he clears his dishes. Yeah. So, okay, so then we cut to Bryce's baseball game. And it's fucking baseball, right? Like, it's strike one, strike two, whatever. And then he hits the walk-off home run.
Yes, and I did write down, they show us striking out twice, and then we show, like, just when he hits it for the home run, we cut away just as he hits it. And I wrote that before it actually happened. I saw two strikeouts, like, he's getting a home run, we're not going to see him make contact with that ball.
Yep.
I found this particularly remarkable, though, because by this point, it's 4 minutes in, we've had three different scenes. This is the fourth scene in 4 minutes.
Yes.
We've been introduced to three different groups of people, and now we've got to watch three hits of I don't know what the term is. Sorry, I don't know baseball. We've got to watch three attempts in real time. It's so fucking slow.
Well, and also, like, the kid's wearing a helmet now. So, like, you can't really tell that this is the kid that you already met. So you're like, wait, okay, he said baseball. That's probably that kid. But which kid is him? Is he the one at bat? Is he the pitcher? We didn't fucking know.
No idea.
But yeah, so he wins the game. They're going to the state championships. Woohoo!
Yeah, and we find that out because there's a commentator there talking all about it. The commentator very clearly talking to a silicon dildo. That is exactly what he's talking about.
Right. No, he's the newscaster at the fucking high school baseball game. So they leave in celebration. And as they're leaving, as Bryce is leaving with his mom, we see Bryce's dad, who we've not yet met, standing in front of a ridiculously large truck.
It's an insanely large, like, just... You wouldn't get we get big vehicles here now. We've imported them from you guys, but we wouldn't get them that big. That is enormous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. You could fit three of my cars inside that truck. Like each, my car could sit in each one of the seats in that truck. That's how large it is. It's not a vehicle. It is a climate disaster.
Yes.
And the thing is, just before they get to that, the kid is saying, just throwaway comment, like a first act throwaway comment about how he's got a headache. And I wrote, I'm sure it's nothing, kid. Don't worry. We all get headaches in the first act of a film. It's going to be absolutely fine. And then we saw that his dad had this truck and I was like, oh, it's okay, kid. Because if that headache turns out to be something bad, your dad is already ensuring that the world that you'll miss out on wouldn't be worth
right.
seeing anyway.
Absolutely.
So he's doing you a solid.
So, okay. So then we head to fucking Jesus school for Jesus class.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We learn about Catechism 162.
They get back into Catechism 162, which means they must have been halfway through it previously. They're picking
previous
back up.
Class.
It's 91 words
yes,
long, but that's too much to take in a single sitting.
I guess, yeah. And she's starting at the beginning again. So, like, again, I guess they're reading it with a different theory or whatever this time.
Yeah.
So dumb. And like, this movie does this over and over again because it wants to make religious points. It wants to be a Christian movie. And so, like, over and over again, this just amateur writer has to go, how can I work this religious message? And what if someone stands at the front of a room and just says it to the camera for no fucking reason?
Yeah. While a different religious message is on the whiteboard, so they can like double up on the amount of indoctrination yeah. they're pushing yeah, into right. these kids at any one time.
Right, yeah. But she's teaching them about being charitable because they're not a bunch of fucking Protestants, okay? And then Bryson gets a nosebleed. This will be the first of about 11, I think something's wrong with Bryson scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like this one in particular because it starts with a pained look on his face and the kid three rows in front of him is the person who notices that he's got a pained look on his face. Like, you've got eyes in the back of your head.
Yeah, right, right. You're paying a lot of attention to your friend Bryce, bro.
Yeah, and I do not care. The only way I could care about this nosebleed is if this is a sign he's getting telekinetic powers. That's the only time I care about a kid with a nosebleed, I'll be
he's
honest.
Fighting a demigorgon, yeah. So, but the teacher's like, gross, go clean yourself up, walk it off. And then we cut back to the mechanic with the heart of gold, and he's at a junkyard trying to help out another veteran who has to sell as much as he can before they foreclose on him.
And that's the thing. He's there to try and help him out so that the guy's trying to sell all the cars because he's in financial peril from the government. So, like, he really wants to get as much money as possible out of the cars that he has. That's mm-hmm. a really important point
yes.
to this scene at the start of the scene. It is yes. not where the scene will go.
Right, because he says, the mechanic guy goes, oh, wow, you have my dream car, a 67 Mustang. He's like, I'll give it to you for free.
Okay. I went slightly crazy at this point.
You did.
Because I did not know. I did, yeah. I didn't know what a 67 Mustang was. And he said, oh, and he didn't even say Mustang. He just said, oh, was that the 67?
Mm-hmm.
It's like 67 what? So I looked at the car. I couldn't recognize it. I used Google Lens to look at what this car was.
You only see the, like, the little corner of the car at this point because it was under a big cover,
it's
wasn't
the very
it?
Back of the trunk. And I'm fairly sure it's a 1965 Ford Mustang, not a 1967 Ford Mustang. Like, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. I've put the two side by side. I'm 99% sure it was the one on the left. So as much of this is his dream
not
car,
accurate.
He cannot recognize it
yeah,
from being stood in front of it.
Right.
And when he takes this for free, I wanted him to agree to buy the car, but only if he can collect it at like 2:45 a.m. on the fifth Wednesday after a new moon.
And then he's like, all right, I'll take the free car, but don't tell my wife you gave it to me. And I'm like, I feel like she's going to notice.
She will notice that.
She's definitely going to notice because later in the film, we find out her bedroom is attached to the
yes,
garage.
Yes,
the window
exactly.
looks into the garage.
Basically, her window opens to the garage. Yes.
But also, I looked it up, like, depending on the condition, that car is worth between $25,000 and $50,000. Maybe this guy's junkyard is going under because he keeps giving
yes.
away like valuable vintage cars.
Exactly. So, okay, so now we cut over to baseball practice, where everybody's giving Bryson shit for having a bloody nose, right? They're like, oh, I bet you punched yourself in the face just to get out of class. And he's like, fucking what? We try to introduce this comic relief, and then they just back away from it because they know it's dumb, right? Because we've got the assistant coach that's ordered the baseball shirts that say touchdown on them.
Mm. I can only assume, do you think that actually happened? Because they do apparently both, like in real life, he was playing like football and baseball. Do you reckon they only put that in because it was real? I couldn't check. I tried to check on this, but I spent all my time on 1965
Ford Mustangs. No, I get it.
Couldn't get it, the minutiae.
No, honestly, I don't know. I think that they thought this was really funny and that like when we later saw the baseball t-shirts that say touchdown, that would count as a callback.
Okay.
But I don't know. Like, it was very poorly written, so... But this is yet another something's wrong with Bryce scene, right? Yep. Where we see his headaches and he's all...
Doing some squinting.
Yeah, he's squinty.
And that's all we see.
Yes.
he gets a headache. There's some ominous music. And then, right, scene over.
And we're like, we saw the nosebleed, guys. You know that we get it now, right? But of course, they're padding the time. So then we cut back to who I have as Mecky the mechanic in my notes. It's Ed. Ed is the character's name we learn in Act 3.
This is the scene where we find out his name.
Oh, is it? It's not the scene where I found out his name.
We find out his name. We find out his wife's name in this scene.
Yes, his wife is Marilyn. And he's trying to hide his new Mustang from his wife. So he's like, oh, you should probably leave early to get out of the traffic for work. Quick before this tow truck pulls up.
So stupid.
Yeah. But then, of course, a tow truck pulls up with that Mustang. And why, he's had too many surgeries to have a Mustang.
So wild. Like, again, so I get the point that they were going for, like, oh, you know, he's having to take it easy because he's been unwell, but he just can't stop helping people. He's that kind of kind-hearted guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is insane for them to say he had two major surgeries in the past month.
Yeah.
So he is like 4 weeks out of the first surgery. So he might only be 2 weeks out of the second surgery.
Three at most, you gotta
figure.
Yeah,
it's way too soon to have had two major surgeries and now he's up just walking around and buying Mustangs and working on cars. It's ludicrous.
And he goes, honey, think about it. You're a cancer nurse, right? And she's like, what a weird thing to say if you're not expositing in a movie. But yes, that is the profession that I have. And he's like, well, think of this car as my cancer project. And you think, oh, okay, so he just had cancer. He didn't, right?
No.
It's just, he's just like, because it's rusty and rust is like car cancer.
Yeah.
Which makes sense why you wanted Dr. Alice on this show. Dr. Alice is a cancer expert, and now we learn that fixing up a car is just like curing
cancer.
So your expertise can come in handy here, Alice.
Well, there you go, yeah. So, okay, so then we check with Bryce at the hospital. Now, clearly, this movie, whoever wrote this movie, their main source was this kid's dad, right?
Yeah.
Because this movie is really told through his dad's lens, and all of his dad's, like, grudges and whatnot get aired within this movie.
Yes.
So this scene is like when they first took the kid to the emergency room, dad doesn't think the doctor did enough to diagnose the fact that the kid had a brain tumor, right? And so the doctor in this movie is just hilariously flippant and dismissive of this stupid kid and his stupid health.
Yeah, to the point that she listens to his heart through his shirt.
Yes.
Yes, that is genuinely made with a stethoscope.
Second, yeah.
Through his shirt while she's talking.
Yeah, she doesn't even listen for long enough to be between two beats of his heart. She just listens in the gap between the two.
I'm sure there's a heartbeat there somewhere.
You were saying, no, that this comes from the dad's perspective. It comes so much from the dad's perspective that the mother is in this film.
Yeah.
I will give you my house if you can tell me her name. I will give you right now my house if you say the mum's name or recall a single thing that she said. She's present in this boy's life, but not in this. She just kind of hangs around in the background of scenes at times. It's such a weird thing.
And the kid like has all these scenes where he's like, oh, dad, I love you so much and you're so important to me and not a single fucking one with mom.
No.
And in this scene, they kind of make it clear that it's odd that mum's not here. So they do mention that, well, I did text her and sorry, she's just not here.
Yeah.
He's very much like putting into subtext of, and my ex-wife was such a bitch. Yeah, oh, she I would tell her about the kid and she would never be there.
Yeah.
When she was there, she wouldn't say anything. She'd be quite peripheral in the background interacting with like the extras who were pretending to be nurses.
My favorite part of this scene is when, so Doc's being really dismissive. Dad's getting really frustrated that the doctor's being really dismissive, but figures that he can't do anything about it. So they leave. And as they're walking out, Marilyn, the mechanic's wife, just walks in, says, excuse me to get around them, looks at the chart and walks out again.
Yes. Which is wild because we've established, the one thing we've established is she's an oncology nurse.
Yeah.
So was this kid with headaches taken to the oncology department in order to see whether he had headaches or not? No. Or was she just like freelancing her way, like, you know, she around moonlighting her way around the hospital at this point?
But of course, we haven't had enough. Something's wrong with Bryson soon. So he goes home. We get immediately him waking up with a headache, and dad takes him back to the hospital where the same doctor is like, I don't want to doctor your stupid fucking kid. Oh my God. So, but she's like, fine, I'll order some fucking scans or something. Jesus. So she goes out and she's talking to this other doctor about what an asshole this kid's dad is being about his kid being sick.
Yes. And we know the dad isn't an asshole because while she's out there, we cut to the dad talking to his son and the dad just casually threatens to say, like he says, I want to punch that lady doctor. Yes. I want to punch her. So he wasn't an asshole. He was just threatening violence on like female medical workers.
And the I guess it would be bad regardless, but she's also like this tiny, tiny woman. So yeah, it's the fucking worst. Yeah. But then we immediately from her going like, let's order some tests. We like speed cut to dad dropping the son off at school.
Yes. It's now just somewhere else, sometime else, but the same characters. So there's no, that's the one thing this film cannot, one of the many things the film cannot do, but possibly the thing it can do the least is scene transitions.
Yes.
Yeah.
It, at no point gets it. I have no idea the passage of time, but almost any part of this movie, except where they literally write the passage of time along the bottom on one of the scenes.
All right, yeah. Yeah, but it, like the dad's like, you need to rest. You know, you have something wrong with you. And he's like, I can't miss the state championship, daddy. I want to go to school. So, you know, he drops him off at school. So then we cut to the guy, the veteran who he was doing the free work for. He's in the elevator on the phone telling somebody about this great guy that did free work for him. And Miles, the dad who doesn't believe in miracles, is in that very same elevator.
Yeah.
He's back. He's so back. It's great. I was so excited when I saw him again. I was beginning to think that I'd imagined him. I was genuinely worried I'd start getting nose, like act one nosebleeded as well. I was like, oh no, I'm going to end up in the hospital. Yeah, I genuinely worried. Yep. Also, when the veteran walks in the lift as well, it's like that elevator is in the most kind of like completely clinically cavernous white building. And I thought, if that veteran guy has been severanced, I'm back on board with this film. If he's taken that lift down into a different life downstairs, I'm back on board.
It's also just minor stupid thing, but he like walks up a big flight of stairs to get on the elevator. What a stupid fucking movie. Okay, then we check in on Bryson's dad at work.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know what he does. I think he works for the school, right? I think he's a teacher.
Oh, is he?
Well, I don't know. They have this gigantic mansion, so it doesn't feel like, you know, he's a teacher, but who knows? But yeah, so he's talking to a coworker about his son's medical problems.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, those stupid doctors won't do any stupid doctoring. And she's like, yep, that is how doctors are in the real world. Yes. She says, well, you know, I happen to know, I have a friend who is a neurologist or something like that. She's like, you should.
The head of neurosurgery.
The head of neurosurgery. Oh, yeah.
At the hospital.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case.
The chief neurosurgeon.
I'll put in a good word for you, I guess.
It's so weird. I couldn't tell whether she was just showing off the social circles that she moves in. Or whether she'd been like hired to like tout for business by this guy.
Oh,
like
yeah.
If anyone mentions their kid having any headworks, you know, just like give them my car. Sheila, I'm looking to buy a new car.
So, but yeah, she's like, I think you should have him taken in for a CT scan. She's like, really, a CT scan? She's like, look, this isn't a movie about migraines, okay? So then we check in. We're back. We're at school with Bryce, and we have this like slow motion, joyful youth scene.
Yeah, they're all at lunch.
Yeah.
And just to fuck with me, his girlfriend corrects his hair. She reaches out and she sorts his hair out and says, hey, beam in thine own eyes there, girl. Come on.
But of course, this is yet another something's wrong with Bryce scene. This time he passes out.
Yeah.
We cut to him at the hospital again. And now those damn doctors are laughing in the background while his son is sick. They don't know what the hell's going on, right?
Do you think the scene transitions are so bad? Do you think it's a deliberate artistic like plot that when he passes out, we don't see him again until we don't come back until he wakes up? So like he is blacking out between scenes and we're just blacking out with him.
It right. It's like Memento. We're feeling it as he feels.
Yeah.
It. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Also, it's a really weird thing as well. It's sort of a small detail, but when he cuts back to him at the hospital, he is so snuggled in that duvet. I've never seen anybody in the hospital like curled up all like feet, like he's so snuggly.
Yeah. Yeah. But Dad's had enough, damn it. He calls the friend whose friend is the head of neurosurgery, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so then we check back in on Ed at his shop, at his garage, and he's talking shit.
He's doing some acting.
Yes, oh, isn't he? Yeah.
He's doing some terrible acting, pretending to ring up a massive bill.
Yeah. So yeah, he's just finished with somebody's car and he's like, oh, you know, I got these parts and those parts. And then he's adding all these numbers up. And he's like, well, here's your price. And it adds up to $1 because that's all he charges for his work.
Yeah.
Doesn't he do that with like, does he have a cash register or just a giant calculator, like
yeah,
a sort of store calculator?
Adding machine, like, yeah.
Either way, so why has he gone out and bought an adding machine just for the bit? Because he's not actually ever charging anyone anything. That's just a prop for his gag. He must have spent so much money getting that. Like he's underwater just on the gag alone.
But he loves veterans so much, so they salute each other. And just as this guy leaves, Miles, the atheist dad, shows up.
Yeah, Miracles Don't Exist Dad appears. This is the longest scene we've had so far because there's two conversations in one scene.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, one character leaves and another comes in. Whoa, hold on a second. So yeah, but we learn here that Miles is a news reporter and he wants to do a story about the mechanic with the heart of gold, right?
Yeah. We also learn that he is the son of a great reporter. And I thought, he's a fucking Nepo baby. That's so. He only got a job as a reporter because of who his father is. It's like Marina Hyde at The Guardian all over again. Like, oh, she's a good writer. Oh, her dad was a baron. Okay, that's probably how she got that job. It's like that with fucking Miles Himmel here.
Yeah. And of course, because this is based on a true story and this is a real guy, they have to like shoehorn that in. And who the fuck cares? It matters not at all to the movie because Miles matters not at all. But all of a sudden, Ed the mechanic is like, oh, sorry to hear about your dad. And we're like, why the fuck would we? What is this now? But he's too humble. He doesn't want any publicity for all the work he does, right?
Yeah, so he says he's not a story, and then the veterans are too shy, and then the journalist just turns on his heel and walks away.
He's like, oh, I guess there's nothing here then.
Great journalistic tenacity there.
Your dad would be ashamed of you, Miles. Larry would never walk away.
What did you want from him, Alex? Do you want him to start like, going through the guy's bins and hacking into his phone?
Yeah, do some fucking journalism, man. So then we check back in with Bryce's dad at the hospital when in walks Dr. Dean Kane, the head of neurosurgery.
Yes, yeah. And the thing is, the fact that we're back at the hospital, I wrote down, great, while we're at the hospital, I can get my plot whiplash treated because we are just whipping between things. But yeah, it's Dean Kane. And Alice, this was your first, like, I was going to say a taste of Dean Kane. I'm going to say exposure to Dean Kane.
I'm sure I've seen him around in places. I recognize his face, but yeah.
So yeah. So, and then Dr. Dean Kane breaks the news that his kid has cancer, but he does it backwards. Right. Because he's like, hey, I'm going to be the one that's going to do the surgery to take your kid's cancer out. And the guy's my kid's what now? He's like, ooh. Did it backwards again, didn't I?
it's absolutely insane. It's genuine. I mean, I guess you don't get to be head of neurosurgery for your bedside manner. That's what we're learning here.
Yeah.
Like, but maybe he just got the job because his dad used to be a damn fine head of neurosurgery, and that's how it works in this town, apparently.
He goes, well, you can come in and see him. He's being prepped for surgery. And I'm like, wow, I feel like you would need dad's permission for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been prepped, but his dad didn't know. His dad's in the hospital the entire time. So did they like smuggle the kid out? Did they like distract the dad? Like, look over there and then take the kid out.
So, all right. Well, I guess we all need to stop and see if Dean Kane is planning to do any surgery on us, I guess. So we're going to take a quick break. But we'll be back in a minute with even more of Miracle at Manchester. Mrs. Appleton, you wanted to see me?
Dr. Dean Kane, come in, have a seat.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, I asked you in here to talk about your bedside manner again.
Oh, has there been another complaint?
Did you open up a conversation with a dad who didn't know his son had cancer by saying, I'm your son's cancer doctor?
Yep, sure did.
And you don't see how maybe that was an indelicate way to introduce yourself?
Right, because I should have said oncologist.
No, it's like the discussion we had last week about not telling your patients that you'll give them a hint, it rhymes with schmancer.
That they'll think that they have answer.
And how you broke the news to the Oldham family that their son didn't survive his surgery.
Well, okay, but two kids are easier to fit in the back seat than three. That's just math.
And Mrs. Barnhopper, who you told about her diabetes diagnosis by slurring the words, diabetic says what, together.
Well, yeah, no, but she did say what afterwards. I was worried she wouldn't, but it was accurate because she said that. I don't really see what the issue is.
Yes, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to let you go regardless.
Fine. Fine. You know what? I wanted to be an ICE agent anyway. Watch this. Watch this.
Are you trying to shoulder roll over my desk?
Three more tries. Three more tries.
Please leave.
And we're back for more of this shit. And we're going to rejoin the action by checking in on Miles, the atheist reporter dad, hanging out at the Larry Himmel Memorial Newsroom.
With quite a plaque. Like, that plaque that they zoom in on of the Memorial Newsroom is incredible, with the little etched out, presumably Larry Himmel, and his wife just sat on his shoulder in the background.
Yes,
really,
like,
creepily.
Like the bad devil angel psycho machia thing. It's crazy.
I honestly can't tell if is that his wife or is that him, but like, it does look like he's wearing a necklace though. Like it looks like a pearl necklace.
Yeah.
And a pearl earring. But I don't know if that's just like the top of the tie, but it's very, because why would his wife be tiny and
know.
Over his shoulder like
bizarre. Maybe she was just like a real hen pecker or something, notoriously. I don't know. It's crazy. This is a real plaque, by the way. This part of the story is real.
This is actually his plaque.
Yeah.
I knew he was a real guy. I actually bothered to look him up because I was like, why are we showing the Larry Himmel Memorial Newsroom? And then I saw he was a real guy.
Oh, and we're going to speed scene for a minute here, right? Because this entire scene is Miles sitting in the newsroom. We see the little plaque and his boss comes in and he's like, Miles, I need a story. And he's like, I'm working on one, boss. And then the boss walks away and that's the fucking scene.
Yeah.
He
asks him what he's working on. He says, this?
Yes.
I think it's good.
Yes.
I'll let you know when it's done. Like, that's it. No follow-up.
I have no questions about that at all. I'm sure this is fine.
Oh, I can see that there is words on your computer screen. Yeah. So, so that's that scene. And then we go back to the hospital so dad can check on Bryson. And there's a like, hey, everybody, could you guys all stop doing your doctor stuff for just a minute so that I can have a solo piano moment with my son? And they're like, oh yeah, no, we love to stop prepping people for surgery.
Yeah, he's meant to be getting prepped for surgery at this point. Apparently prepping for surgery at this point doesn't involve shaving his head. They do other things other than shaving his head. Are they going to do keyhole surgery via the nostril? Like, you're going to have to get his hair out of the way. And you're going to do that first before you do anything else. Otherwise, there's going to be hair everywhere.
So he's not a pet. You don't have to knock him out before you shave him.
And what are they doing? Yeah, because they're just kind of standing around. One's holding his hand. The other's just sort of looking at a chart. And I'm like, I don't think you guys are prepping him for surgery at all.
Do you think they misunderstood preparing for surgery and thought it was like emotionally preparing?
Oh,
like,
there you go.
Well, deep breath.
You can
get
do it.
This together.
And he's still really determined that he wants to play this game in 2 weeks. He's having brain surgery and he thinks he's going to play a baseball game in 2 weeks' time.
I feel like they've underprepared him for surgery.
But we don't know what universe this takes place in, though, because the other guy had two major surgeries in a month and he was walking around and fixing cars. So, like, we don't know how time passes in this universe.
No, that's actually...
Well, apparently it passes really fucking quickly with the speed of these scenes.
Right. That's why we don't have time for these long-ass scenes. Yeah. Quick before anything. So we've got now in this scene, we've got Bryson, we've got his dad, and we've got his mom, right, who just is a fucking under five in the background.
Yeah.
And all three of them are trying to cry, all three of these actors, and none of them pull it off.
Yeah.
But eventually Marilyn, the nurse, she shows up and she's like, all right, well, that was you guys' chance to try to cry. You didn't get it. Time to do doctor shit. And then we cut to Ed checking out his Mustang.
Yeah. Right? Talking to his car.
Yes.
Talking dirty to his car. I mean, this is dirty talk he's doing here.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I'm going to take out every little piece of you and I'm going to clean it up good and then I'm going to shove it back in there. Yeah, shove it in there. And then we cut from that to the brain surgery scene and we're like, why the fuck did we just see Ed, guys? Are we all seeing Ed? Guys, are we all seeing Ed together?
It's a metaphor, Noah. He's working on the car engine while the surgeons are working on his brain.
Well, you're right. Yes, exactly. So eventually it becomes a whole, see, brain surgery is just like working on a car. It's just like a head mechanic, right? That's what we're doing with the scene. But for just a second, it's just like, what happened?
Yeah, like we just went over there for a moment. Whenever we are seeing the surgery, the thing that struck me is, wow, brain surgery these days, surprisingly clean and bloodless. This is, it's amazing what they can do now. It's not a drop of blood to be seen. Even when he's pulling the knife around, the knife is totally clean in his hand. Like, what have you done with that knife?
He's just wiping it on his pants, I guess, down there. We can't see it, yeah.
Well, it probably is what he's doing, given he ends up getting staff.
That's true.
And the thing is, what I really wanted, because we've just seen Ed talking dirty to the car, I wanted like to be cutting to Dean Cain talking dirty to this kid's head or to this kid's tumor. Oh, I'm going to get you all the way out. Oh, you're so big.
Shove you over there. Yeah. But Dr. Dean Cain comes out to the waiting room after the surgery to let everybody know that they got the tumor. You know, it was cancerous, but it's all good now. Right.
And when you say everyone, you mean everyone.
This waiting room is so full. There is, like, I don't know if you noticed this on the first watch round, but, like, there is a woman sat on the same seat that another woman is sat on. Yes. And she's just perched between her legs.
Okay, so later on in this movie, there's going to be a scene where, like, there's supposed to be a crowd leaving a football game, and there are fewer people in that scene than there are in this waiting room. It's nuts. Yes,
it's amazing. And Tinker just comes out to the entire world like, we got it. Like it's Obama announcing the Kill Bin Laden.
Everybody leaves. Everybody's like, oh, okay, we were all here for this guy. I feel sorry for the other guy who had surgery that day. Like, oh, nobody showed up for me though. Yeah. But okay. So then we get Marilyn. She goes back to work. She wakes up Bryce's dad in the waiting room, right? Dr. Dean Cain has an update.
Yes. And Dean Cain, I zoomed in. I can't prove it, but I know, like, in my heart of hearts, Dean Cain's medical badge, the photo on it, is his professional headshot. And not sure a recent one either. I think this is, like, headshot from New Adventures of Superman, Lois and Clark time. I think that's what he's still got on there. I can't prove it, but I know it deep down in my heart. I feel it.
That's the one he's using on IMDb. Yeah, I think he's, like, laying on a fucking bearskin rug or something in that one. Yeah. So, yeah, but he shows up with an update, and it's... Again, this is being told through the dad's perspective, right?
Yeah.
And so the doctor is telling him, hey, man, like, we got the tumor out, but it looks like there's still some shit in there that we're going to have to go after. And the dad's treating it like he just, you know, like, hey, look, man, you quoted me one price on this fucking job, and now you're giving me I didn't want to add undercoat to him, you know?
Yeah, I could have seen a guy who would have taken this kid's tumor out for free in the middle of the night for $1. He'd have made a whole deal of it, but he'd have charged me $1. He's just as good. But yeah. Now, the kid, as Alice mentioned, like, he's got a staph infection, and it's probably from having so many people coming and going while he was being prepped for surgery.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, no, we don't know about the extra cancer yet. We just know about the staph infection now. Oh, spoilers. Yeah. But dad's all upset that there's more work to be done. We have a long sequence of the girlfriend looking at his empty chair at school and remembering those earlier scenes.
With the Dalai Lama over her shoulder.
What the hell is the Dalai Lama doing
in
the fucking Catholic school?
I would say the Dalai Lama is probably the most appropriate bit of decoration in that room. We will get to see the room later. And when you see the rest of the things that are in that room, you go like, oh, well, of course the Dalai Lama's there.
Okay.
It's the other things that don't make sense. I promise you, that room is insanely decorated.
Now I am super excited as to what Marsh paused on. Okay. So now for once, this movie's going to fucking anchor us chronologically, right? I mean, it comes up and it says 1 month later and we're like, okay, now I know.
I can't take a breath. Oh, okay, thank God for that. Yeah.
Poor Ed's probably had two more surgeries by now. Yeah. And we come back to the stupid t-shirt thing with the touchdown baseball shirts.
And they try to make this a moment. Like the dad says to the guy who got the t-shirt, you know, I really appreciate your friendship. Yeah. And it's like, dad, really appreciate the friendship of that guy, I guess, whoever he is, we don't know.
No idea who this guy is.
In a film full of people who don't have name, he is the most unnamed of all of them. Right, somehow he has less names than the rest of them.
Well, and of course, like so much of this movie is like all of the people involved in it are like half the audience, right? So like this guy, whoever this is based on, was like, well, there's a part for me in the movie, isn't there? And yeah. then Dad's like, oh yeah, there's a part where I tell you how much and meaningful you are and I love you and it's the whole thing. He's like, oh, I hope it makes sense in the movie. He's like, we're not really worried about that. Anyway, he goes, well, you know, I've been praying for you guys. And I'm like, well, so far you've been doing a shit job, man. He's had yes. cancer and a staph infection. He's about to get more cancer.
He seems very confused about the staph infection. So he's like, when you're a kid and you get it at home, it's totally fine and you fight it off. And then you get in a hospital and it's really bad. And it's like, but that's because hospital-acquired infections are really bad. Like, yeah. MRSA is staph, is a resistant form of staph.
Like, he's like, well, I had a staph infection. It was, I walked it off. I don't know what the hell's wrong with my kid.
And it's not intended, but like the guy who's saying, the guy is being the Jesus advocate to the dad, because apparently the dad's lost his faith. And we don't really see him go through much of a crisis of faith. This is meant to be that crisis of faith. The most crisis-y it gets is his dad picks his phone up and says, I'm going to go listen to this voicemail. And I thought, yeah, that's how I get out of a conversation with people too. So, I think I've got a voicemail I need to listen to.
Right. He actually did have a voicemail, so it's not quite the way you do it, but yes.
A voicemail from the head of neurosurgery, his kid's cancer doctor, which means either he didn't take the call or he heathed it through to voicemail.
Yes.
Or he didn't have his phone on like noisy when your kid is in the hospital and nearly died with a staph infection. All of these are bad dadding.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the voicemail starts with, I've been trying to get hold of you. Like, yeah. Okay, so this is at least the second call, if not the first.
Right, right. He's like, I'm trying to get a hold of you. I am the guy who treats your kid's cancer. It's very important. I'd like to talk to you face to face. I'm like, oh, I'm sure it's fine, man. I'm sure it'll be good.
Well, it must be fine, because if it was bad, Dean Cain's doctor would have just said it over the phone. Like, yeah, your kid's dying right now, I think.
Yeah. But before we can get to that, we have to have this award ceremony where they give Cancer Kid an award for being the best assistant coach on the team.
Putting the team before himself by getting cancer, apparently. Yes. It's a weird way to do it, but you know.
Yeah, and the kids wearing their stocking cap at this point. I was like, okay, this kid wasn't going to shave his head for this bullshit role, and they didn't have the bald cap, but they did have the bald cap. I don't know why they chose to go this way. Okay, so then we cut to mom and dad at Dr. Dean Cain's office getting the bad news, right? He has double enthusiastic brain cancer.
And Dean Cain's reaction here is basically to like, look, my bad. It's cancer back. Look, my bads.
Yeah. I was sure.
On me, guys.
I was sure I had cleaned that whole thing out. Yeah, but I didn't check the other side. And then the mom yells no with all the enthusiasm that I have when I lose a pinball, you know? Oh, damn it.
I think this is why mum's not in the film very much at all, is just because she can't act.
Mm. Oh, that could just be like, it.
We did some scenes with her. They all came out terrible. We had to cut all of them.
Oh, she's on the cutting room floor.
She sits there just looking pained for the entire conversation and says nothing else.
Yeah. The dad goes, well, you told me my kid was cured. And the guy's like, well, I don't think I used those words. I mean, but,
and he's like, oh no, but you did use those words because it went viral on TikTok.
Yes.
This kid who, based on a true story, this kid had cancer a year before TikTok even existed.
Yes, right.
They've decided to just put in a bit of TikTok.
Yeah. And the dad has this, like, I will not let my kid have brain cancer kind of a moment here or whatever. Like, he's going to scare it off like a prom date.
Yeah, like he immediately goes it isn't true, instantly to, okay, it is true, but like we're going to get through this. And dad moves through denial to acceptance faster than this movie moves through scenes. That is how quickly he goes through the stages of grieving. Uh-huh.
He's like, you people are unbelievable. And he storms out. And I'm like, okay, anger. Also anger. Also, and this is the first of many times that we will see Marilyn, the oncology nurse, freely sharing Bryson's medical details as work gossip.
Yeah, just like Wallow announcing his latest like prognosis to just anyone who walks by.
One of her friends is like, oh, what's his problem? She's like, oh, well, you know, his son has double enthusiastic brain cancer and he's probably not going to make it. Here's his chart.
But this is also when Marilyn notices all those Make-A-Wish posters.
Yeah.
Right?
She's never heard of them before as
apparently,
an oncology nurse.
See, I wonder what this is all about. Yeah.
Okay. Do they have an age limit? Like a firm age limit on Make-A-Wish? Because this kid, like the actor seems too old for Make-A-Wish that it seems almost sarcastic to try.
16, 17,
I think the kid was 15.
Okay, the kid in real life. So I looked up, actually, I did look this up. You're allowed to be up to your 18th birthday.
Oh, okay.
So there are kids who are like 17 and like 360 days and they get to do a Make-A-Wish. And that feels too old. I don't like want to take anything away from them. They make the wish at that point. That wish might take a year. Okay, it probably doesn't take a year because, like, they don't always have a year. But they still are going to be 18. It's a bit weird.
These spoiled-ass cancer kids.
And the other thing is, they never make a wish for more Make-A-Wishes. It's like stupid cancer kids. That's like Make-A-Wish number one is wish for more Make-A-Wishes.
Obviously. So that night, Bryson wakes up with a headache. Of course.
Yeah, sleeping in a god-awful hat.
Yeah, in his little stocking cap.
Huge hat.
That has all of that actor's hair under there somewhere. Yeah. But we see Dad, he goes downstairs and he finds his dad drinking and crying in front of the fireplace, right?
But with the world's largest glass of whiskey as well, like ludicrous pour of whiskey.
He has a fishbowl of whiskey and he's... And he's sitting in front of the fireplace and he's like, Dad, what's the matter? And I'm like, you didn't fucking tell him when you got home? Like, you're easing him into this?
Yeah. Like, if that kid doesn't wake up in the middle of the night, do you not tell him he still has cancer? At what point were you going to break the cancer to this kid? It's insane that they haven't told this kid he still has cancer.
Yeah. But Bryson doesn't want to have more brain cancer, damn it. And the dad is like, he's, you know, more crisis of faith thing. Like, he's like, well, you know, I've been praying and praying and it keeps not helping. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's just what prayer does.
Yeah, it'll do that. It was great because he said, like, I hate this is happening to you and I wish we could trade places. And I thought, oh, please let this twist into a Freaky Friday type of movie at this point. That would be amazing. Like, greatest film ever if it does that. He prays and bang, God says, done.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So yeah, but then we watch Bryson comfort his dad, not for the first time or last time in this movie. Again, like the extent to which this movie is like, yeah, the person who really suffered from this cancer was the dad is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Marilyn waking up. And I normally would leave this scene out, but this is where we see that her bed is sitting basically immediately beside the garage that Ed's working on these cars in.
Yeah. And he thought he could smuggle in a car at 3 a.m. at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And presumably test if the engine works multiple times as he's trying to fix it, like 3 inches from her sleeping head.
Yeah. So, okay.
It's a Mustang. They're famously quiet cars.
That's right. We hear it later. It is quite quiet. Yeah. So now Bryce is getting ready for another surgery. And this is where we learn that they did have a bald cap for this kid.
I mean, you both had, oh, wow, they do have ball cap money.
Yes, right. Or maybe they only had, they were like, look, we can get three goddamn scenes with the bald cap, right? We're going to have to find a solution the rest of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, bald cap for any other amount of time in the film and we get less Dean Cain. And he said he'll only do one day, but like, we can't scrimp on the cane.
Yeah. So, but all his school buddies are there to comfort him. And then Marilyn comes in and she's brought along a couple of people from the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah.
And so you beat me to it. I wrote wish for more wishes in my notes, but Marshall.
Damn it.
And I'm like, it's like, I obviously, you know, you would wish you didn't have cancer though. They're like, the whole presentation on this is stupid, right? They should say up front, they should be like, okay, first of all, no wishing for more wishes, no wishing that you didn't have the debilitating disease, right?
And I think the third one has to be no evil wishes because they don't want to have to do something genuinely wrong just because this one kid's dying.
Right. Hey, the kid two fucking beds over took my Legos. So, yeah. So, but all his friends are like suggesting different wishes that he could do. He's like, hey, do I have to decide now? And they're like, nah, it'd be a pretty dick move if we made you decide now.
But also, kid, like, you probably shouldn't wait too long. You probably do want to kind of don't put it on the long term to do list.
So now. Dad is at the hospital chapel trying to pray and also at the school, the priests are helping the kids deal with the problem of the brain tumor with their friend by appealing to their bullshit religion as well.
I think Dad praying is the first time we hear his name because he says, "Hey God, it's me, Rick."
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't understand why that happens in films of telling God who, because I thought God knew everything.
Yeah, I feel like God knows who's talking. Yeah.
He doesn't need you to name yourself, but at least we know the guy's name now three quarters of the way through the film.
God definitely has like prayer ID. Like as soon as you start praying, he's like, oh, okay, it's that guy.
It's Rick, yeah.
And it's great. So we're in the school classroom as well. Now, this is the Dalai Lama classroom where the priest is sort of praying for them. And I looked around, okay, on the walls of this class for teens in the year 2023 is an inspirational poster from their idol and hero, John Wayne. That's on there on the wall. Below that is a poster for, you know, that teen favorite pop combo, Rush. There is a Rush poster. And I had to actually Google to check that it was definitely the band Rush and not just some of the things saying Rush. And I found the logo is exact to one of the posters for Rush. It's definitely Rush. And am I crazy? In the notes here, I've put a screenshot of one of the pictures on the wall. If you scroll down and see it, that's Kramer from Seinfeld.
I'm pretty sure that's Kramer from Seinfeld.
It's Kramer
from
Seinfeld that they framed on the wall of this religious studies class.
It's not. There's not like a quote there or anything. It's just a picture. Just a picture. Of Kramer
a framed
from
portrait, like a painting. Yeah.
I think that's what that is.
All this is especially odd when they went to the trouble of writing in the TikTok scene.
Yes.
Like, we've made this really modern, but now we're not going to bother with the rest of the film.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I also, there's a great line that the priest throws in there while he's talking about how Jesus can cure cancer. Mostly he doesn't, but he can. And he goes, look, either this is just a book of stories or Christianity can cure cancer. And I'm like, yes, it is one of those two things. We can agree.
When he said, either this is a book of stories, I wrote, I'll stop you there. Whenever all is coming, we don't need it. We do not need it. I'll save you some time. You can do a scene transition. You love those. Do another scene.
Yeah.
I also like this bit because this priest specifically says that he's going to heal Bryson from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, which is a really good idea to start with the head because that's where the cancer is.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't want to leave out the rest of the body because we know that God is like a genie and if you're not really specific with your wishes, he'll fuck you over.
Right, he's like, look, we're going to get to that ingrown toenail, but we're going to start with we start at the top here.
God, if it is said from the tip of your toes to the top of your head, he might have died in the brain tumor before it ever got up there. Like slowly, like powering up in a video game as it like slowly zoops up his body. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And it's great. So in this montage of prayer as well, the dad starts praying and like he's edging around the problem of evil and praying to God, like sort of like, oh, why would you do this? And then we pan down and he's doing it loudly over his sleeping son. Which is such like way to send a vote of confidence. Like, why did you kill my son? Why are you definitely going to kill my son? Why is my son dying? Sorry, Bryson, did I wake you, kid?
Right. And he did.
Yeah.
So we get a little montage of Bryson in the MRI scanner and we watch him vomit, lucky us. We see the girlfriend. She's very sad. I wrote in my notes probably because she doesn't have a name, but apparently it's Alex.
Mm. It's this scene that we hear her name.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And her hair is looking better. And I thought, is she leeching his life force? Is that how this is working? And then when he's dead, she's going to move on to another one.
Right, right. Obviously.
She's 400 years old and just moves around schools, just leeching. Like wherever you see a cancer kid, she's been there. Better film. Much better film.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, but then she tells him that, you know, he has to get better so he can take her to the dance. And
she's suddenly really sassy out of nowhere.
Yeah, that hadn't been a part of her character till now. Yeah. So then we get Dr. Kane checking in with Dad, right? And this is yet another moment where, like, the dad, the character in the movie, is an absolute piece of shit to the man who's trying to help his son.
Yeah.
But this movie is just really sympathetic to him because it's being told from his perspective and by a guy who's just so goddamn blind that he doesn't realize that he's an asshole.
Yes, right? Absolutely. And there's so many ways you can see that because he's talking to, even when he's talking to like one of the doctors before Dean Cain walks up, he says, oh, you know, my son's always been that's just the kind of kid he is, you know, sports and cars. And it sounds like the kind of birthday card that your dad buys you when he absolutely does not take an interest in your life. Like,
yes,
I've got a son. Yeah, it's got like it's got some sports. It's got a car on the front. Yes. Maybe a golf
sports
club.
Cars,
who knows? He might have swung a golf club. You have that happy whatever birthday it was last week. Sorry, I forgot.
He goes, he's a sports kid. And I'm like, well, that's the opposite of what Eli is. Eli, whatever Eli, it's the spectrum. But he's like, hey, do you think that my son could at least go to a single baseball game? And Dr. Dean Cain's like, well, of course he can, man. Why would he not be able to go to a... Yes, obviously. Okay. And then we cut to all of the kids, all of the baseball kids lifting weights, right?
Including one kid who's lifting the single smallest weight I have
ever
seen.
Oh, it's so funny. It's like a 5-pound
like
dumbbell.
They're like senior citizens at the swimming pool doing the aqua aerobic class with like a tiny little weight, and they are able to bench more than this kid.
Yep.
And I say that as someone with no arms, with absolutely nothing to my arms.
So yeah, so we watch Pete Hegseth get really jealous of these kids' form for just a little while. And then we see that the friend from the very beginning of the movie, he's like, hey, I just got a text that Bryson is going to be at our game tomorrow. I want to do something for him, all of us together. All right?
Yeah.
So, okay. And the thing that it turns out, they all shave their heads in solidarity with their cancer friend.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. We see that at the start of the game. Before we see the game, we actually do also see the cheerleading squad doing some cheerleading. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to say, it is the least energetic cheerleading I have ever seen.
It's pretty lame cheerleading.
There are actors who only have that cheerleading costume for other jobs that they do, who are better at cheerleading than the cheerleaders in this film. It's less cheerleading and more like warm wishes leading, like kind regards leading.
So Miles, the reporter, is there.
Suddenly, we've not seen him for at least a third of the film at this point. He just pops back up again.
Yeah, he pops up and like the game's over, right? Like, okay, football game, whatever. Three shots of a game. And he starts talking to the reporter starts talking to the coach, right? And he's like, well, you know, I hear that the cancer kid is here. And he's like, yeah, you know, cancer kid's very sad. He's like, well, you know, as you know, my dad died of brain cancer as well. And I mean, this sounds nitpicky as fuck, but his dad died of pancreatic cancer. It's like such a weird lie to tell in the movie.
Oh, wow.
That is a weird lie.
Yeah.
Why would they tell that lie? They could have just said also died of cancer.
Of cancer
would do it. It's not like the coach would go, oh, really? What kind? What kind of cancer? Was it? Name three cancers. And the thing is, right, they have built up Miles' role throughout this movie.
Yeah.
And then he talks to the coach, and then it's like, okay, he bags an interview with the cancer kid. And I wrote, this is going to be interesting. I can't wait to see. End of scene. We don't get to see it.
Yes. He's like, can I do an interview? And he's like, yep. And then we cut to him at the hospital. And it turns out he likes to draw, too. Jesus fucking Christ. And we got like dad sleeping on the floor now because that's how dedicated he is to his son. Damn it.
Yeah. We see the girlfriend gives him some rosary beads, and it's a set of rosary beads that a Mexican cartel leader would call a bit much. Like, all right, like, tone it down. And they talk about Joseph as well. I think he was. Somebody says, everyone knows St. Joseph was a carpenter and the father of Jesus. And I didn't know Joseph got a sainthood. Again, it's all about who you're related to. It's all nepotism all the way through.
Isn't it, though? Isn't it just... All right, well, God's all primed for a miracle at this point, so I guess it's time for us to take another break. But first, let me give Act 3 the hard sell. Why the hell is the mechanic guy in the movie? Why the hell is the reporter guy in the movie? Couldn't they have found something relevant for these people to do during Act 2? Find out the answers to dumb Jesus questions instead when we return for the dawdling conclusion of Miracle at Manchester.
So, Miss Illusions, I see you're applying for a home improvements loan.
I am, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, and you've listed your profession as online content creator.
Yep.
Seems a little vague.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's what I was going for.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm afraid we are going to need just a bit more specificity.
Sure, yes. I create digital media products distributed online for entertainment and educational purposes.
That's not less vague. That's just more words.
Yeah, sure. So I facilitate the construction, distribution, and promotion of internet files, including but not limited to files.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you there. Okay, so let's just make this simple. What did you do today exactly?
I made fun of a kid with cancer.
Sorry, you what now?
But it was Christian.
The cancer?
The kid was Christian.
So you made fun of a Christian kid for having cancer?
No. I made fun of a kid with cancer for being Christian.
Wow.
Ah,
Okay, okay. Well, what did you do the day before that?
I planned out how best to make fun of the kid with the cancer.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
I do not see.
No, yeah, I'm not going to get that loan, am I?
No, and I'm actually calling the police right now.
Yeah, no, I feel you should. Probably. And we're back for still more of this shit. We're going to rejoin the action with Ed, who we haven't seen in a half an hour, 40 minutes of goddamn movie. He's getting up early for some early morning car working. And I guess, like, we've never established that Marilyn works the overnight shift, but apparently she does.
Yeah.
So he's decided since he's up at 3 a.m. anyway, he'll take lunch to his wife, right?
But on a previous 3 a.m., she was waking up in the middle of the night while he was working in the...
Yes.
Maybe it was her night off, but yeah. She's working nights, she's working all sorts of different shifts.
Who the hell knows?
Yeah, we do not know her shift pattern at this point. It could be absolutely... I don't think they know that. Like, I assume Dean Cain is at the hospital at all times in this movie, whenever they need him, like an NPC. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's funny about this is that, so you're like, what a sloppy way to introduce this, right? Because he shows up at the cafeteria and Bryce's dad is there, right? And we're like, oh, okay, so this is the sloppy way of putting these two guys in the room together so that they can become friends. But they don't.
Nope.
They don't meet at this moment at all.
No. Nope.
In fact, nothing happens that's relevant to the movie in any way.
Nope. Nope.
So, okay.
Other than she mentions the kid, like that is the only thing, is this is how he hears about the kid.
Right. This is how he knows that there is a kid with cancer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now the Make-A-Wish people are back to talk to Bryce, tell him he's taking too fucking long.
Okay. There was one of the Make-A-Wish people. She had like long, darkish hair. And I had her as Cara Santa Make-A-Wisher. I don't know what I should have done, but I had her as Cara Santa Make-A-Wisher.
Well, I described her as looking at about the same age as Bryson. So I don't know if Cara will take that as a compliment or not.
So, yeah. But, and of course, he's been drawing this whole time. And we see at this point that he's drawing a 1967 or possibly 1965 Mustang.
Yeah.
And so the Make-A-Wish people show up and they're like, so what do you want more than anything else? And they're like, he's like, can I give my Make-A-Wish to my dad? And they're like, no, man, he's not a dying kid.
Yeah.
Come on, fuck off.
Yeah, he wanted the Make-A-Wish Foundation to buy his dad a truck. Like, they're not going to do
he's
that.
He's just got a new truck. We've literally just seen him get a new truck.
Yeah.
But also, it was a specific Ford truck. And is this movie sponsored by Ford? Or is it just that Christian movies will only feature cars made by American anti-Semites?
Oh, you know,
it's either Ford or one of those David Dukes of Hazzard cars. No other type.
Well, what's amazing is that, like, right after the Ford reference, dad walks in with some Chick-fil-A. So, yeah, maybe it's... that is it. There's a great moment because he's like, oh, I'm sorry. If I'd known you guys were here, I would have brought more food. Do you want me to go back out and get you some? And I so wanted Cara Santa Make-A-Wisher to go like, no, I don't support their stance on LGBTQ rights.
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
But the son's like, my dad can't have the wish, but can I wish for a new truck for my dad? And they're like, dude, come on, don't be a dick about the thing.
So, okay, kid, you can, but can I first talk you through just the basic economics of this charity? So you can have that truck, but here's all of the other cancer kids you're depriving of the wish. So you want the truck, do you?
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I'm like, man, ask to meet a fucking celebrity or something. Jesus Christ. Also, how would you afford the gas and the insurance on this? You're a kid.
Yeah.
Jesus. So, okay. So the Make-A-Wish people, they go to leave, but they borrow his sketch pad real quick, right? And they're looking over the sketch pad. They're saying, like, I wonder what kind of car this is that he's been driving. Well, wouldn't you know it? Just then, Marilyn, the oncologist, walks by. So I guess they're doing this in the middle of the night.
While she's working a double, maybe? I don't know.
Okay, yeah, it's probably working a double. But the reluctant car expert, Marilyn, says, well, that is a 1967 or possibly 65 Mustang. And they're like, oh, okay. So now she goes to Ed and she asks Ed, she's going to ask Ed to give Bryson this Mustang that he's working on.
Yeah. Good job. She told him about Bryson like literally 3 seconds ago.
Yes. Right. Yeah, well, you remember
the last scene you were in.
Yeah. Over lunch, yeah.
Yeah.
I want him to tell that cancer kid to go fuck himself. It's his dream car and it's worth 50 grand.
It's such a dick thing to ask. I mean, like, honestly, it's such a dick move to ask your husband, hey, would you give that car to a dying kid with cancer who's dying?
No, but I'll loan it to him for, what did Dean Cain say?
I'll loan it to him, the 80% chance that I'll loan it to him for 6 months. Yeah. So, okay. So meanwhile, Bryson is at the hospital wondering why his religion doesn't work. Right.
And he says, Bryson, he prays to God, dear Jesus, I'll always love you. And he says, I just want you to know, Jesus, no matter what happens, I will always love you. And I want him to add, even if you did put a tumor in my head that might kill me at 15 before I ever got a chance to ring that Christian bell, if you know what I'm saying.
he's like, but Jesus, I love you and I don't doubt you at all. And that's going to be important for the miracle thing later when we have to blame kids who don't get miracle out of the cancer for dying of their own cancer. So he's like, but I believe in you fully and totally. Please don't torture me forever after I die. Amen.
It's so funny. He's delivering it to the little Jesus on the crucifix on the rosary beads. Like the little, he's delivering it at the little tiny Jesus on that. And I just wanted to cut to the Jesus and he gives like a little wink. Kind of, he can't do a high five because obviously his hands are kind of busy.
No, but right,
like,
yes.
A wink would be good.
Hey, you know what? You have to come to me. We can still do a high five. It's up there. It would be high.
Literally, don't leave me hanging. That's what I said the entire time.
So yeah, so but then the next day, Bryson's asleep. Dad's watching him sleep, as dad is wont to do, apparently, when the hospital CEO shows up.
I'm so confused as to why the CEO appears here. He just comes to introduce Ed the mechanic. Like, why is the CEO of the entire hospital here to introduce Ed the mechanic?
A stranger. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yes, who he doesn't know, right? No. It's not like... Or at least that we know of, maybe seen him at the office parties or something. I don't know. But yeah. And also, why wouldn't Marilyn do this?
Yeah. You know,
who he already knows. But so he's like, yeah, I wanted to introduce you. This is Ed, Rick. I'm going to go back to very important work, I would assume.
Just off again.
So they wake Bryce up and he's like, hey, kid, I'm your nurse's husband. I want to give you my 67 Mustang. And he's like, wow, it would suck if I died before I could drive it. And he's like, right? Yeah. By the way, he's wearing a fucking shirt now that says Ed's Mechanic Shop or something. I'm like, the whole fucking movie, I didn't know your goddamn name. And when I finally figured it out, now you're wearing it on your fucking shirt, you dick.
It's like this movie has a fog of war. Like, until you discover their name, you can't see it. But then once you've seen his name, they were wearing name badges and
stuff. Right, it's opened up on the map. Yeah, exactly. So, okay, but then we get another MRI montage, right, where we get him and he's got his friends, that which we see that Bryson and Ed are becoming very good friends, right? That's a lot of this montage, which is a bizarre thing to try to develop an hour and 3 minutes into an hour and 21 minute movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why it has to just be a montage of them like designing the car together and picking colors and all of that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's all we got. And later they're going to say, I love you to each other. And we're going to be like, really? Okay. So, and then we get the Make-A-Wish people show back up. They've brought him an iPad.
Yeah. Which is cool. It's not a truck cool.
No, it's like,
it's fine. It's one of the big ones.
No, it was. It was a very big iPad. It's funny because like if you're expecting a Ford Raptor, this is pretty fucking lame. Otherwise, yeah, it's pretty cool. Felt like they were really throwing Make-A-Wish a bone, right? And they're like, they did get him some nice stuff.
It's not really Make-A-Wish is Make-Up-A-Wish because he didn't wish for the iPad. No. You've made that up. It's Make-Up-A-Wish.
Or Make-Up-Wish. Yeah, exactly. So, and then it's time for the girlfriend to sadly prey on the bleachers.
Yeah.
Right? When suddenly the teacher from catechism class shows up, I was so fucking proud of myself for remembering who the hell this character was.
I did not remember. I had it down as a lady we have never seen before.
Yes.
That's exactly what I wrote.
She taught us catechism 162 earlier. Yeah. But she's like, you know, the girlfriend, Alex, she's like, yeah, you know, the tumors come back and there's nothing they can do for him. Well, except this experimental trial in Florida that they can do. But other than that, there's nothing that we can do. And, of course, the catechism teacher's like, well, there's nothing we can do. And she looks up.
Yeah, she's trying to be so reassuring, but she gets to this point where she's just like, well, I know that it's all going terrible now, but God is still in control. And it just sounds like she's saying that God is torturing this family for his own amusement.
Yeah. Like, Alec, the girlfriend, literally says, no offense, but why hasn't God helped? And the teacher shrugs. It's like, don't think about that. Don't think about that.
Mysterious ways. And
like, it's amazing that this scene, like they literally saying, like the point of this scene is, well, God is good even if he isn't curing Bryson's cancer. And then from there, we cut directly to a room full of cancer kids. Like you let me into the editing suite and I got to control what we got to see just after the God is good line.
Yeah.
Well, I love this fucking, the evidence that the catechism teacher offers. She's like, think about it, Alex. You're a cheerleader. How many football games have you sat there and used your prayers to magically influence where they won? You know, she's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, well, but presumably she also prayed at the games they lost too, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. So then there's a moment with Dad wheeling Bryce through the hospital late into the night, and he wants to give his iPad to another kid. And of course, we get this because we need to know that Bryson is pure of heart, and that's why God miracles him. But it also kind of feels like it's kind of lame. The Make-A-Wish guys didn't get me the truck, and I don't give a shit about this iPad. You know?
But it's also because after the whole cancer thing and the end of this movie, that the real Bryson started a charity to give kids in hospitals iPads. So he's got the iPad, and he wants to give the iPad away to these random kids. But like when he's saying, Dad, would you be mad if I give my iPad to a kid? We've literally never seen in the movie...
No. Yes, right.
I'd be mad if you gave it away to someone that you've only said by name and you didn't even bother showing who this kid is or developing any kind of rapport between Bryson and this poor cancer child.
This movie is so desperate for anything to happen and it's so short on runtime. Why would you not develop this friendship for this kid?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And then we have this moment, which is amazing to me. So Bryson and the dad are going to have the dad, am I going to die conversation.
Yeah.
And the kid playing Bryson is a good enough actor to pull this off, and the guy playing the dad is not, right? So we get to watch that mismatch for a while, and that's a lot of fucking fun.
Yeah, and I could tell that this was so badly done and so boring, because Alice's notes are now speculating about characters we haven't seen for a while. She's drifting around to them.
I've literally written, when are we going to get back to Miracles Don't Exist, Dad? Because we haven't seen him for ages.
No. And he's meant to be really important. He was the second.
In the first couple of scenes.
Yeah. So, okay. So now it's the next day or someday. I don't know. Who gives a shit?
We know it's not 1 month later or they would have told us.
Yes. Yeah. But Dad gets a phone call, right? About Bryson seeing all his buddies one more time before he has to go off to this experimental treatment in Florida.
Yeah.
Right. Dad's going to take him for a surprise.
A surprise piggyback as well, because he enters the scene piggybacking this kid around, which is weird. He parades him in front of the entire school on a piggyback, which is a weird thing to do.
That would be so humiliating. Can you fucking imagine? So what we're seeing here is they've brought Bryson into the bleachers where all the other kids have gathered together and they're all going to pray for him. Right.
And there are not that many kids. Like in the title scene, there's a lot of kids. In the bleacher scene, there are not that many kids. Like there's maybe a class and a half worth of kids.
Yeah, 61 kids.
Yeah, it's like a standard waiting room. Right. A standard waiting room for a number of kids.
But they bring him in. They put him right in the center. Everybody's in a red shirt except for him, right? He's in white. And then they have this big group pray, and when they go to pray for him, everybody reaches their hand towards him at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is creepy as fuck.
It's so creepy. And they say, the priest says something about laying hands, and it looks like they're saluting Hitler.
Yes. It's they're really all hiling. Yes.
Yeah. And Alice, you did a cancer PhD. You did a PhD in curing cancer. Did you ever try just...
I didn't do a PhD in curing cancer. I just did a cancer cell biology PhD.
You did. It was to do with cancer. I mean, look, if Eli was here, your PhD would have been something completely unrelated. And that would have span off an entire universe of...
Yes, right. No, by god-awful movie standards, that was a really accurate description of your educational credentials, okay?
Admittedly, what I am showing is here, I literally read your PhD thesis.
You did read my thesis.
So what I'm showing is I didn't understand it. But nevertheless... Yes. You did a whole PhD in cancer. Did you ever try just laying your hands on the cancer cells or getting everyone in the lab to just lean over and be like, on the cells to try and cure them?
No. But to be fair, a good chunk of doing my PhD was trying to keep the cancer cells alive. So,
interesting.
Oh, so the opposite.
Exactly. There was a lot of like genuinely talking to my cells to try and like keep them alive when they were getting infections and things. Because
did that help?
No, of course not. Okay. it helps me psychologically.
All right.
It drives you crazy doing a PhD.
Yeah. You spent your PhD trying to keep cancer alive. Did you work for Big Pharma?
Yeah, right.
You have to keep it alive so then you can figure out how to kill it.
Interesting.
That's basically what the research is. Keep it alive and then do things to it to try and kill it. It's basically torture for cancer cells.
And she has a PhD in that. What we're saying is don't fuck with Dr. Alice, right? Cancer fears Dr. Alice.
There's an amazing bit during the prayer as well, because the priest is doing the laying the hands thing on. But when he's doing that, he introduces it by sort of saying, look, essentially, like, I don't know if this is going to work that we're going to try, but we're going to try it. And so it's essentially he's saying, like, either we can cure this kid's cancer with our magic or we can't. Let's find out.
Like, yes,
the
grand
experiment begins while he's fucking cancer kid's satellite.
Dr. Alice can't be bothered to check, so we're going to check for ourselves.
It's at this point that I think I realized, and I don't know if this is true or not, is this priest the friend, the random friend that gets brought up, the emotional?
Like, I don't know. Maybe it is.
Maybe it is.
No, I think that's why we've got the really gaudy friend. It actually turns out to be the priest, but I didn't go back and check, so I have no idea.
Might be.
We'll never know. We will genuinely never know. It's impossible.
I don't care now.
Yeah, I will erase this movie from my mind altogether afterwards. So, and then when they get done with the prayer, we zoom in on Bryce, and Bryce goes, very Jesusly, he goes, it is done. Right? but what is done? Okay. So now we cut to his 11th MRI, and then we see Dr. Dean Cain looking over his brain scans, and he looks really mad at the brain scans.
Yeah. He does. He's like huffily scrolling on it.
Yes.
And I think
he's
meant to be confused as to what's happening here, but he looks genuinely angry at the tumor for some reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, but they're getting ready to fly him to Florida for this treatment.
He says he's getting his own plane.
Yes, yeah.
Which is just bonkers.
Right. Make-A-Wish really made up for the iPad thing. So, okay, we felt bad about that iPad.
How many Pepsi points do you have? Yeah. So Bryce is like, hey, Dad, are you mad at God for torturing me? And he goes, no. Actually, now that you mention it, yeah, I am kind of mad at God for this. This is some shitty stuff to do. And he's like, don't you think that God has a plan? And he's like, well, it's obviously not a very good plan.
I wrote, like, he does have a plan, Bryson, and it's to kill you. That is his plan. And like, it's all going to plan your death.
Yes, it's a shitty fucking plan.
I mean, keep asking questions like that, and it makes it clear to me that God has a point, actually.
Yeah.
Like, keep this up. I'm like, I see it now. Yeah, I get the plan. This all makes sense. Mysterious ways. Yeah, I get it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, but Bryce prays that God will show himself to his dad, and he prays about how awesome his dad is and how much he loves his dad, and, mom also is fine, I guess.
And we get, like, a montage of him doing some classic dad work, because he's not really done any classic dadding in this movie.
No.
So we've got to, like,
Apart from sleeping on the floor of the hospital. I think that's some classic dadding.
Being asleep was classic dad stuff. Yeah, absolutely. His unconsciousness was part of the classic dadding. So we've got to, like, look back at all the times he threw a ball with his kid.
Mm-hmm.
But then it just cuts back to Bryson finishing the prayer, and I thought, was that a tumor-induced hallucination? Has his tumor just grown there? Because that can happen with brain tumors.
Yeah, and he's like, God, please make Dad more chill about me dying. Amen. And then Dr. Dean Cain shows up with the latest scans and like, the tumor's been miracled away, guys. It's gone.
Based on a true story.
Yeah. They don't even have to go do that experimental treatment in Florida anymore. In fact, the entire hospital is gathered around behind him at this point.
Yeah, this is my favorite bit of background hospitaling, because there's just some random people we've never seen before stood behind looking happy about this news. Like, we just wanted to come and be there while you heard this news.
It's great. Yeah, because not only is the tumor gone, apparently the area all around it is healed as well. And I'm just like, also we checked and God also added 2 inches to the size of your penis too. Like, mysterious ways, truly.
So yeah, so they're all happy. Marilyn calls Ed. I wanted Ed to be like, okay, well then I don't have to give him the car then, right? I can give him. He doesn't have cancer anymore. It was a cancer car and now he's fine. He's fine.
But no, it's dead. Ed says, I knew it. It's like, did you though, Ed? Did you? Like, fucking how did you? How could you possibly have known? You're not even Gotti.
Right? That not. We know of. And also, if you knew it, why didn't you tell the fucking kid, you dick? What a dick thing not to tell the kid. All right. So now they're all going to go to the dance together, right? So we get everybody getting their prom pictures. I guess it's not prom, but they're getting their pictures taken together in their nice duds, right? When Ed pulls up in the admittedly amazingly cool Mustang.
Yeah, yeah, the 1960-something Mustang. Yeah,
yes, fully restored. Yeah, 1960 from the Mustang, yeah.
For the 15-year-old to drive.
Yes, right. Yeah, it doesn't seem like a good idea.
A vintage Mustang.
Yes.
This is where I did some digging because I was like, okay, maybe he can drive this a bit better because you have automatics in the States. And I was like, but would an old Mustang be automatic or manual? And apparently most of them would have been manual.
So absolutely.
The fact that the kid can drive this is utterly bonkers.
Yeah, right. No, that's a great fucking point. Yeah. And Ed turns to, he gives him the Mustang, gives him the keys to the Mustang, and he turns to the kid and he goes, Bryson, I love you. And I'm like, that's weird for us. Yeah. From our perspective, that's just weird because you only met him 4 minutes ago for us. So yeah, so he pulls away with it. He gets him and his girlfriend get in the car and he goes to pull away. I wanted the Mustang to break down immediately, but it didn't.
Or him to stall it and crunch the gearbox.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, fuck, how do you drive this? Why are there 3 pedals? There's too many pedals in this one.
Why would you give me this? I'm 15.
And yet, no, he just drives away really smoothly.
Yeah, he shows up at the dance and is roaring the engine and everything. And I'm like, all right, he's got it all figured out.
Alice is just jealous how smooth that was because Alice is learning to drive. He went from first to second really smoothly there, Alice. There was no jerking at all with it.
I remember the first time I drove my manual car and it was nowhere near that smooth.
So, okay, and then fucking Miles shows up to do the voiceover. Yeah. Mm. Why the fuck would Miles do the voiceover? Where the hell has he been?
I think he's basically only been in this entire film only to explain why there's interview footage of the actual story, why there's film footage of him being interviewed.
I guess.
It's wild because he's doing a voiceover at the end. Okay, he's not related at all. He's a totally ancillary character. If you want to make him that important, make him voiceover all the way through.
Yes.
From the bit where he's having like penne pasta with his family. Just having
we
just
don't
do
know
bits
that wasn't
bit.
Breakfast. Yeah.
It might have been breakfast. Yeah. Just do bits of voiceover throughout the film. Yeah. And now it all works that you found the story.
Yes, obviously. But yeah, now Miles believes in God and butterflies again, I guess. Right. And then because we've only made it to like an hour and 14 minutes, they pad the runtime with like real life footage of this kid playing football and shit. And I guess a lot of it was just to make us feel like assholes for having written jokes about this the whole time.
Especially when they show footage of the actual kid. And one, he's a lot younger looking than the actor who was playing him. And he's wearing glasses with an eye patch over it because very clearly when you have a brain tumor, it isn't like Bryson in this. Like, oh, I had a nosebleed that one time and I squinted once. It's actually much worse than that. So when you see the kids, like, oh yeah, no, you didn't. I can see why you didn't do that all the way through the movie because we could not do this movie if that's what the kid looked like all the way through.
Yeah, no kidding.
Stupid eye patch kid. We couldn't do it. Look at his fucking eye patch.
But also, like, during the little montage of shots and headlines and stuff like that, at the end, like, they show that he did get the experimental treatment in Florida.
So, yeah, I looked that up because I had that note as well. But I think, actually, it said he was going that month for it. The headline is, like, experiment treatment starts this month. And apparently, the day before, he found out that he was fine. Now, obviously, he found out it was fine because of the other stuff that
the
was
the other
being
treatment
done
he had.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yes. The multiple surgeries and the radiation and the medicine.
And like, Alice, you looked this up, didn't you? Like, the type of cancer he had is actually relatively treatable. Is that?
Well, it's medulloblastoma, which is, it's not a great cancer, but in younger kids, the prognosis is reasonably, most of the time, the prognosis is okay.
Yeah.
Because we know what to do and we do all the treatment and all of that stuff. He's a bit older, so, you know, I wouldn't want to say something about his personal case without knowing his medical history. But yeah, it is something that we know about does happen in kids and we can treat.
Yeah. And the thing is, this movie did know his medical history and still didn't want to say anything about his personal case from a medical perspective. Yeah. And that seems telling to me.
Right. But the dad's like, you know, the doctors, they said they couldn't explain at all what had happened. And well, I think we can explain what happened. I'm like, well, yeah, but you would be wrong. No, like, I mean, I can explain. The Smurfs did it. See, their eyes just explained what happened. That's easy. The doctors want to be correct when they do it. But then the real kid tells us that a lot of other kids still die of cancer, so their god isn't real or sucks, but it would be real nice if you could help them give those kids iPads. Anyway. So in summary, I have to ask, Dr. Alice, is this better or worse than watching people drink their own pee?
Honestly, so much worse. There's so many scenes. And genuinely, when Bryson was talking to his dad and finding out that he still had cancer, I wrote in my notes, I have nothing to say about this. This is such a nothing scene. I don't, like, they're talking about life and death stuff and I still have, like, it's so dull and boring.
Oh, yo,
so much bouncing around.
I knew you would never believe we were doing you the favors of giving you the pee drinking documentaries, but we were. Yeah, we were looking out definitely. For you the whole time. All right. Well, that's going to do it for our review of Miracle at Manchester, but that's not going to do it for the episode just yet because we still need to descend one more level. So Dr. Alice, tell us what's on deck.
How the hell should I know?
I don't, like, that's a great question. And since Eli didn't put anything into the calendar, I also don't know. So be sure to keep up with our social media for an announcement shortly after this episode debuts. Alice Marsh, thanks again.
Oh, no, thank you. This was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was fun.
And don't forget to check the show notes for links to Skeptics with a K and the No Rogan Experience.
Yeah, and also Alice and I were the editors of The Skeptic magazine in the UK. So you can check out original skeptical journalism. Just go to skeptic.org.uk. And we promise that we will never run an article written by famous paedophile Roman Polanski in 2026.
What the fuck was that? Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have thought a skeptical magazine needed to make that clear, but yet here we fucking are.
I guess that's where we are in the world now, man. So, with that to look forward to, with something to look forward to, not sure what it'll be, that's going to bring episode 562 to a merciful close. Once again, a huge thanks to Marsh and Alice for all their help today, but an equally huge thanks to all the Patreon donors that help make the show go. If you'd like to count yourself among their ranks, you can make a per episode donation at patreon.com/godawful and thereby earn early access to an ad-free version of every episode. You can also help a ton by leaving a 5-star review and by sharing the show on all your various social media platforms. And if you enjoyed this show, be sure to check out our sibling shows, The Scathing Atheist, Citation Needed, and D&D-, and The Skeptic Rat, available wherever podcasts live. If you have questions, comments, or cinematic suggestions, you can email godawfulmovies@gmail.com. Tim Robertson takes care of our social media. Our theme song is written and performed by Ryan Slotnick of Blue Drops on Mars. All the other music was written and performed by our audio engineer Morgan Clark and was used with permission. Thanks again for giving us a check of your life this week. For Heath Enright and Eli Bosnick, I'm an illusionist, promise to work hard to earn another check next week. Until then, we'll leave you with the American Graffiti Clubs.
Bryson went on to live a happy, healthy life before becoming one of the 4,000 American teenagers who die every year on the road in road collisions.
Oh, God.
Never should have given him that Mustang, man.
Yeah. God went on to ignore most of the other tumors.
I'm not a miracle dad. Still doesn't believe in miracles. Still not sure why he made the movie.
But he believes in butterflies.
And salad.
Yes. Staying regular. That's what he believes in.
Miracle at Manchester makes it sound like some sort of pretentious club in like a venue, like, like with the at sign. Like, this is, oh, did you get cocktails at Miracle at Manchester last night? It's all right.
Yeah, the Miracle at the Manchester. Yeah.
Sorry,
dumb.
I'm being really slow at getting down there.
All right.
Use the side drag down thing. Yeah.
I can't see most of my screen. I've got too many lights. I don't have
it
the professional
really
kit
does,
that you guys
really
have.
Does
it's
not
really
look
difficult.
Like that from our angle. All right. Everybody's ready to go on the Lisa mattress ad then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And Alice did not know who Dean Cain was. She knew that I'd written Dr. Dean Cain and she had no idea what that was.
Oh,
I recognized his face, but I didn't.
Right.
I don't watch films.
I envy
He's
you.
Not in films.
No, you wouldn't find him in films. I mean, films, but like this, yeah. I see him in films.
You see him in your dreams. You see him on the inside of your eyelids when you go to sleep.
Oh, he's right there with like Sorbo and Eric Roberts in terms of how many. I think Eric Roberts, we figured it out the other day. I think Eric Roberts is probably the person we've seen in the most movies. But yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He's close.
Not the person you've seen sober in the most movies.
No. No. I think I saw him sober once.
This content is canned credentialed, which means you can report instances of harassment, abuse, or other harm to their hotline at 617-249-4255 or on their website at creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org. This podcast is a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm LLC and was created without the use of generative AI. Its contents may not be used for AI training. Copyright 2026, all rights reserved.